Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another edition of KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week, your listening post for politics, Iowa style, where we explore and analyze who's been making news in and around the state capital, what that news is, and what it all means. We're glad you're with us on this day after Christmas. I'm Dennis Hart, joined as always by my partner in politics, Laura Bellin of the blog site Bleeding Heartland. Welcome, Laura.
Good to be here, Dennis.
Can you believe, Laura, this is not only our last show of this year, 2022, it is our 100th broadcast on KHOI Radio. Who would have thought it? Would you have thought that?
No, time flies. It's amazing.
Yeah, even when planes are grounded, even when they can't get off the ground, time's flying. There's no question about that. So tonight on our 100th show, we are going to take a look not only at what made news this past week in Iowa, but look back at what the state legislature did over the past year. And also look at what our congressional lawmakers did as well. So strap yourself in, everybody. We are ready to go. Let's start. Laura, this past week, Iowa's congressional delegation downplayed recommended charges against former President Donald Trump by the U.S. committee investigating the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. Apparently, the two U.S. senators from Iowa believe it's not that big a deal.
Well, I was grateful to the Cedar Rapids Gazette's Aaron Murphy for covering this story. I also reached out to all of the offices of the Iowans in Congress and did not hear back from anyone. But Senators Grassley and Ernst, their staff did respond to the Gazette. And it wasn't too surprising. Generally, during the January 6th committee hearings, the Iowans in Congress rarely reacted to any of the revelations. And it seems like Senator Grassley's spokesperson was implying that this isn't going to amount to much of anything.
And a spokesperson for Senator Ernst said the senator is focused on what most Iowans care about, making life more affordable, securing the border, and a strong national defense. Apparently, defending the U.S. Capitol is not one of those things.
Yes, and also Representative Ashley Hinson, who represents the Cedar Rapids area, had a very similar comment that she's focused on what she said Iowans are talking about, how they're going to pay the bills and securing the border and energy independence. I mean, it still is very common for political figures to react to major news of the day, and it doesn't get much bigger than Congress recommending criminal charges against a former president. I mean, it's literally never happened before in U.S. history.
We'll see how it plays out. The Justice Department gets the referral. It is only a recommendation. We'll see if they bring charges, and we will be talking about it undoubtedly next year on this broadcast, Capital Week.
And also, there still could be state-level charges in New York and Georgia, among other places, where former President Trump is being investigated for various possible crimes.
Right. There was still more big news last week involving the congressional folks in Iowa. Iowa's two Republican U.S. senators, Grassley and Ernst, voted against the nearly $2 trillion spending package that passed overwhelmingly in the U.S. Senate. 18 Republican senators joined all 50 Democrats to vote in favor, but not Grassley and Ernst.
Well, and this was interesting because Senator Grassley actually did vote for one of the procedural motions. In the Senate, they have all of these hurdles that the bills need to pass because they can't pass with just a simple majority like they do in the House. So Senator Grassley actually did vote for a motion to proceed with debating the budget bill. And it made me think, well, maybe he is going to vote for passing this budget. But in fact, in the end, he voted against it. Sometimes when something like that happens, it suggests that perhaps if his vote had been needed to get the bill over that 60 vote threshold, maybe he would have been there to prevent the government from shutting down. But he wanted to signal that he wasn't really in support of what was in that omnibus budget bill.
And he said he voted against it because it was, in his words, and I'm quoting now, bogged down with pork as Americans continue to struggle with rising prices. And Senator Ernst said the spending package, she voted against it because it was, in her words, it showed that Washington's budget process is completely broken.
Well, it was interesting that Senator Grassley focused on pork because the Senate did consider a number of amendments on the morning that they passed that budget bill. And one of them that was offered by Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin would have removed all of the earmarks, about $9 billion total spending in hundreds and hundreds of earmarks. And Senator Grassley actually voted against that amendment. So I thought it was interesting that he said that he was against the bill because it had a lot of pork in it. And Senator Ernst, what struck me about her saying that Washington's budget process is broken is the fact that Senate Republicans were actually very involved in negotiating this deal. The House Republicans would have much preferred that nothing like this bill be sent to President Biden because Republicans are going to be in control of the lower chamber in just a week. So they were hoping that the Senate would just pass like a 1 week or a 2 week continuing spending resolution and that they would then get to negotiate. But Senate Republicans were willing to play ball with the Democratic majority there. So it was really, I mean, the top couple of Senate Republicans, Mitch McConnell and John Thune, both voted for the bill. So when Senator Ernst said that the budget process is broken, some of her own party's leadership were very involved in that process.
And just days after the Senate passed that bill, the U.S. House passed it as well on a 225 to 201 vote. Nine Republicans joined Democrats in approving the bill. None of those Republicans were from Iowa.
That's right. They were almost all Republicans who are not coming back to serve in the next Congress, either because they're retiring or they were defeated in a primary or in the general election. So, yes, it was. And this is a massive bill. Again, this funds the entire federal government through next September. It also includes another large aid package for Ukraine, both military and humanitarian aid. And it includes, as we mentioned last week, electoral college count reform and a number of other things and lots of earmarks for Iowa. But Democrat Cindy Axne was the only Iowa member of Congress to vote for this bill.
And Iowa 4th District Republican incumbent Randy Feenstra, as you reported today, Monday, on Bleeding Heartland, declined to ask for specific projects in his district to be included in the bill. And this is not the first time he's done this.
No. So this is a process called earmarking, where within the large federal budget, members of Congress can ask for specific projects in their districts to be funded. These can be things like roads or bridges or water work, sewer work, or it can be programs like childcare or helping a community college establish some kind of a degree program. And I noticed that both last year and this year, Representatives Ashley Hinson and Marionette Miller Meeks, even though they opposed the majority party's spending policies and the Biden administration's spending policies, they did take advantage of that opportunity to suggest earmarks for their district. And many of their suggested earmarks were approved. I think Cindy Axne had more approved, but they still had quite a lot, tens of millions of dollars of projects that will be funded by this omnibus budget bill, even though they didn't vote for it. And Randy Feenstra was among the Republican lawmakers who just decided not to participate in this. He's opposed to earmarks generally. He thinks that the bills spend too much. And so what that means is that when there still will be some federal government spending in the 4th District, of course, as that infrastructure bill comes into effect. But specific programs, roads, and like I said, waterworks, broadband, projects like that, they aren't included in this budget that President Biden is just about to sign.
And Iowa's first Congressional District Republican, Marionette Miller Meeks, there was a report last week that she would like a seat on the House Energy and Commerce Committee.
Yes, this is one of the most coveted committee slots in the House. Ways and Means, where they write tax policy, the Appropriations Committee, of course, where they handle the budget bills, and then Energy and Commerce is usually considered about the third most prestigious committee to sit on. They just deal with a huge number of issues, in particular related to climate change. And as we've talked about earlier this month, Marionette Miller Meeks has decided that she wants to be very involved in climate solutions. She had traveled to the last two UN climate summits, and this would be an excellent committee slot for her. Right now, she doesn't serve on the most prestigious committees. Ashley Hinson has a seat on appropriations, but this would be a big step up for Marionette Miller Meeks if she's able to land this slot. And it was a political reporter who specializes in energy and environmental issues who reported that, and he's usually very well sourced.
It would be a feather in her cap indeed. All right, let's zoom into state politics here. State Democrats looking into a possible problematic donation, $250,000 given to the State Democratic Party in Iowa by a former executive of a now disgraced and bankrupt cryptocurrency exchange called FTX. How much of a problem could this be?
Well, it could be a pretty big problem for the Iowa Democratic Party. The executives from FTX made a lot of political donations to politicians and groups on all sides of the spectrum. So they definitely seem to have been playing both sides. This was a former executive who gave $250,000 to the Iowa Democratic Party. That's a very, very large donation for the Iowa Democratic Party. I mean, maybe that amount of money might not be missed in some huge national political groups, but it's not as if the Iowa Democratic Party has that much money just lying around and that it's easy to donate. Some members of Congress who got donations from these FTX executives went ahead and donated that to charity, but that was limited because of the campaign contribution limits to federal candidates. That would be like $2,900 or $5,800. That is an amount that they could easily donate to charity from their campaign treasuries. But I just don't know. I haven't heard anything more than what was reported in the Des Moines Register last week about this. But the Iowa Democratic Party just doesn't have $250,000 lying around if they decide to donate this. So I'm not sure. I mean, I was surprised to see it. This isn't someone who's been involved in Iowa politics particularly before, the person who made this donation.
Rick Stewart, the Libertarian candidate for governor, asked the Democrats to send him a bundle of hundies during his campaign. Maybe the Democratic Party is going to need a bundle of hundies.
They might. I mean, I don't think that, you know, I just don't know whether they would be obligated to do anything about the donation. I know that a number of politicians who received donations have either returned it or have donated the money to charity. Usually with political committees, they do have an option to donate funds to a nonprofit if they don't want to return it to the donor.
All right, let's zoom on to the coronavirus in Iowa. 3,493 new cases reported last week and the week before Christmas. That was down a little bit. Number of people hospitalized with it went up, but those viruses, RSV, the flu, coronavirus, still just blasting their way through Iowa.
They are, and it's still, the cold weather may have kept a lot of people at home who were planning to attend big gatherings last week, but there was a surge after Thanksgiving, and I think that it's likely that there would be another surge after people got together with relatives for Christmas. That's what happened in January 2022. You may remember that hospitalizations surged to the highest level in more than a year, and they're nowhere right now. They're at 272 hospitalizations for COVID in Iowa. That's not nearly as high as it was at the peak a year ago, but it's still fairly high, and I expect it to go higher. Usually hospitalizations are a lagging indicator after infections. So, but as you also mentioned, the RSV and flu rates are really high right now.
All right, let me quickly mention it is 12 after the hour, wherever you're listening to us, and you are in tune with KHOI Radio's Capital Week, your one-stop source for everything political going on in Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart with Laura Bellin, and we're here every week at this time. This is our 100th time we've been with you at this hour to talk about politics, Iowa style, and how it's affecting all of us. Well, now let's take a look back here. This is our last show of the year. What happened this year in the state legislature? My goodness, a lot happened in the state legislature that was significant. And of course, we had the election. First off, Laura, the legislature and the governor, they got their income tax reduction.
It was big. It was that there have been several large income tax cut bills that have passed under the Republican trifecta, which this was the sixth year of a Republican trifecta in Iowa. And this one was big. Iowa will be bringing into effect a flat tax for income. We've had a progressive income tax for many decades. And so this is going to mean over time that the highest income tax brackets are going to pay the same rate, 3.9%, as everybody else. That was a big one. Also, unemployment benefits were cut. Iowa is now one of the states with the shortest duration of unemployment benefits, and we're among maybe four or five states that go less than 24 or 26 weeks on that.
And the legislature also passed a bill against transgender athletes taking part in women's sports. The governor signed it into law. It was highly controversial in Iowa and across the country, but it is law.
It is law, and there have not been any lawsuits. Some people have asked me, isn't somebody going to sue about that law? Because, of course, there have been lawsuits related to other state laws targeting transgender Iowans, in particular one that's pending before the Iowa Supreme Court right now, related to the 2019 law that banned Medicaid coverage for gender-affirming surgery in Iowa. But there is something written into the Iowa Civil Rights Act where when they amended the Iowa Civil Rights Code in 2007 to add protections for gender identity and sexual orientation, there is some language in there that exempts sports. And that is because they didn't want to jeopardize any Title IX issues with sports. And so I have been told that that is an obstacle to litigation against this transgender girls athletic ban that the governor signed in March. So I haven't heard of any plans to challenge that law in court.
One of the things the governor did not get was her public money to private schools voucher program, but she is really going to try again this coming year.
She's going to try it again. And it's something every time I talk to somebody who works in the legislature or around the legislature or adjacent to the legislature, it's something everybody is talking about. Will the Republicans have the votes in the Iowa House to get 51 votes for that school voucher bill? And it's very much in the air. The Senate, there's no question really that the Republicans will be able to pass something that close to what the governor wants in the Senate. They've done it already before. But in the House, it's still a little bit dicey. The House Speaker, Pat Grassley, has said he's fairly confident he has the votes, but some people believe that he may be bluffing.
And one would expect actually the Senate maybe to be the one that would be the roadblock, but the House is here. And you've reported on this broadcast before that one of the reasons that the House might be in opposition, Republican lawmakers, is because of their rural districts. They might lose money.
They might lose money. But I mean, it doesn't really explain why the senators from rural areas don't have the same concerns. There's only one Republican state senator who's voted against one of these school choice bills, Annette Sweeney. And I'm not sure why the other Republican senators fall in line on this. If money is diverted from the public schools to private school tuition for some 10,000 students, which is the proposal that was on the table last year, the consensus when I talk to people in education circles is that all school districts would take a hit, right? Large and small. I mean, the urban and suburban school districts would take a hit, but they could probably absorb that. But the small rural school districts, the ones with 500 or fewer total students, they just don't have a lot of margin for error. So even if they only lose 5 or 10 students, they might lose a teacher over that. And so that is why it is perceived as such an existential threat to the rural school districts. But the House Republican caucus has been a little bit recalcitrant on some other issues as well. There were some tort reform bills related to trucking industry liability and medical malpractice caps that also the Senate Republicans were willing to pass, but the House Republicans weren't. And so I think there is just something unusual about the dynamic within the House Republican caucus. And I wonder, with all of the turnover that we just had in this election, whether that will remain, whether there's still going to be a hardcore group of people resisting some of these bills, or whether the newly electeds will be more likely to fall in line.
Another big issue next year, undoubtedly, is going to be abortion. It was a big issue this year in Iowa. It is still legal, but the future, no question, it's murky.
Yes, actually, Iowa still allows abortion up to 20 weeks of pregnancy with a 24-hour waiting period in effect. But there are a number of states that have much stricter abortion bans in place. And so actually, there have been people traveling to Iowa for abortion access. But as you say, the future is murky. The Iowa Supreme Court will probably at some point next year consider the governor's effort to reinstate the 2018 abortion ban. And the governor and the Republican legislative leaders have been a bit cagey about whether they plan to try to pass a new abortion ban. I suspect that they will try to pass some new law because the Iowa Supreme Court is very unlikely to rule on this issue while the legislature is in session. And I think that among the part of the Republican base that wants a stronger abortion ban is not going to want the legislature to sit around for the entire 2023 session and do nothing.
We will see. Let's briefly summarize very briefly what happened in the November election. We've talked about it so many times on this broadcast. On primary election night, Mike Franken defeated Abby Finkenauer for the U.S. Senate Democratic nomination, and then Senator Grassley defeated Franken on November 8th. And then Governor Reynolds on November 8th swamped Democratic challenger Deidre DeGeer. It was a horrible night for Democrats across the board in Iowa.
There really weren't a lot of upsets this year. I would say the only big upset really was Mike Franken winning that Democratic primary. Abby Finkenauer was considered the heavy favorite around this time last year. Very few people would have expected Mike Franken to get that nomination, but it was a very strong year for Republicans. They had a lot of historical forces working in their favor. They had the fact that Iowans tend to reelect incumbents. There have only been two governors in the last 75 years or so who didn't win reelection. Also, Iowans tend to reelect their senators. It's been decades. 1984 was the last time an incumbent senator in Iowa did not win reelection. And the fact that the governor and Senator Grassley were on the ticket at the same time, that had not happened since 1986, and the Republican candidates in most of the races were able to outspend their Democratic opponents. So it just was a brutal, the story of the night across the country was that the red wave didn't materialize, but it certainly did in Iowa.
And we were there that night documenting it as it went on that evening when we were counting the returns. Also on that November night, the GOP won every congressional race in Iowa, and they swept every statewide office except that of Democratic Auditor Rob Sand.
Yeah, it was a clean sweep, as you say, of the federal races. The third district race between Cindy Axne and Zach Nunn was very close. That was about less than 1 percentage point difference. And I think that Democrats are going to make a play for that district, a very serious play in 2024, because the turnout environment was bad for Democrats this year. In a presidential year, more Democrats will come out to vote. It's also possible that Libertarians will have more candidates on the ballot 2 years from now. And I think that that third congressional district is going to be in play.
And briefly, the GOP won big in state legislative races, a 34-16 majority in the Senate, 64-36 lead in the state House. And those are big leads.
They really are, because they already had a 32-18 majority in the Senate. And historically, that's a pretty large majority. It's rare that one party even had that. It's been decades since any party had 34 seats in the Iowa Senate. And in the state House, again, the Republican majority was 60-40 going into the election, will be 64-36. That's just really big. I mean, most of the last decade, the Republican majority in the Iowa House was significantly smaller than that. And that's one reason why I think the House Speaker Grassley, Pat Grassley, that's the grandson of Senator Grassley. That's one reason I think that he is optimistic about getting that school voucher bill through. It is a large majority.
In our last few minutes, let's talk about what happened nationally that involved Iowa politicians. And some of that involved former President Donald Trump and the January 6th committee.
Yes, Trump was the first president to be impeached a second time. That happened very early in this Congress, that is this outgoing Congress. Cindy Axne was the only member from Iowa who voted to impeach. Of course, the three Republicans voted against doing so. There were only a handful of Republicans around the country who voted to impeach. And in the Senate, of course, both the Iowa senators voted against convicting the then former President Trump, and that would have forbidden him from holding office again.
And Congress passed this gigantic domestic spending bill, a couple, through the American Rescue Plan, the Inflation Reduction Act. And again, Republicans in the delegation said no. Congresswoman Axne said yes.
Yes, and the American Rescue Plan, that was a really big one because many billions of dollars have come to Iowa. That is the bill that was passed in March of 2021. It partly included some COVID-19 relief funds, but it wasn't as tightly restricted to coronavirus spending as the CARES Act and some of the other large support bills. So this one, a lot of money for infrastructure, a lot of money for programs like Medicaid. And that's one reason why Iowa and so many other states have large budget surpluses right now, is that American Rescue Plan. The Inflation Reduction Act, that's the bill that was passed in August of this year, the one that included a lot of climate change provisions as well as spending.
The Violence Against Women Act was reauthorized in Congress, and this was one that brought most Iowa federal lawmakers together.
Oh, this is a bill that they had been working on for years. Joni Ernst was tapped as one of the lead Republican negotiators on this. And actually, they had hoped to pass it in 2019, but it never got done. There was a logjam they just couldn't break related to what's called the boyfriend loophole. That's a restriction on firearms ownership for somebody who's not who's a domestic abuser who you're not married to, but is just a partner. In any case, that was something they couldn't get over before Joni Ernst was up for re-election in 2020, and not much progress in 2021. But in 2022, finally, they were able to get that Violence Against Women Act reauthorized. And this was a priority for President Biden. He was one of the lead people in the Senate when the original Violence Against Women Act was passed in 1994. And so this was included in a big budget bill that was passed in March of this year. And that is one reason, not the only reason, but it was a key reason that Senators Ernst and Grassley did vote for that budget bill. And so did Republicans Ashley Hinson and Marionette Miller-Meeks in the House, along with Cindy Axne, of course.
And an infrastructure bill was passed that brought the parties together in Congress and brought a couple of Republicans and Democrats together in Iowa.
Yes, this was something that was negotiated during a lot of 2021 when you may remember the phrase Build Back Better. The Democrats had a very ambitious plan that involved infrastructure spending and lots of other things, child care, child tax credit. And the bill ended up getting split up into two parts. And the infrastructure bill, which had more bipartisan support, that one passed. It passed in the Senate in the summer of 2021 and the House in November of 2021, with Chuck Grassley voting for it. And in the House, Cindy Axne was the only one who voted for that. That bill is going to bring about $5 billion to Iowa over the next several years in lots of areas. Much of the money is for roads and bridges and waterways, but there are lots of other areas of infrastructure, including broadband, which is one that I think the Iowa legislature will be excited about.
That truly is going to have a major impact on all of Iowa. No question about that. And there was a bipartisan gun safety bill approved. And again, it brought some Democrats and Republicans together.
Yes, this was one I was surprised. Senator Joni Ernst did vote for this bill. It was not as ambitious as what a lot of the Senate Democrats were hoping for. But given that filibuster in the Senate, again, they can't pass bills with a simple majority. They need to get 60 votes. So this was a bill that was something that they could get enough Republicans to support. And Joni Ernst, even though she wasn't one of the main negotiators on it, she did end up voting for it. In the House, at least from the Iowa representative's perspective, it was a party line vote with Cindy Axne voting for and all three of the Republicans voting against.
And Congress passed the Respect for Marriage Act just a few weeks ago, involving interracial and LGBTQ marriage rights. And again, some Democrats and Republicans in the Iowa delegation came together.
Yes, this was one where Cindy Axne had been very outspoken about this issue. And Ashley Hinson and Marionette Miller-Meeks, although they didn't talk about it very much, they did vote for this bill, which would allow, which would require that states recognize any marriages performed in other states. So it wouldn't require that any individual person or church recognize the marriage. But as far as the state government is concerned, they would have to acknowledge that that was a lawful union. So Senator Ernst did vote for that bill. She wasn't outspoken about it when it was being negotiated, but she did end up voting yes. And in the House, two of the three Republicans from Iowa, Hinson and Miller-Meeks, did vote for that bill. Senator Grassley voted against it, and so did Representative Feenstra.
About 90 seconds left, and earmarks were returned to the budget process.
Yes, this was one where Cindy Axne, Ashley Hinson, and Marionette Miller-Meeks were able to get tens of millions of dollars in projects in their districts funded through this omnibus budget bill, the one that just passed, as well as the one that passed in March. Senators Grassley and Ernst didn't participate in requesting earmarks, which was interesting. Grassley, throughout the course of his career, he asked for lots and lots of earmarks, but he's not doing that anymore. And Randy Feenster, representing that large fourth district of Iowa, which includes the KHOI listening area, he did not request any earmarks in either of the major budget bills.
And last thing here, proxy voting continued in the House, but it's going to come to an end when Republicans take control. And this proxy thing got Cindy Axne into a bit of trouble.
It did. I mean, she used proxy voting about a dozen times during this Congress, but the one time she probably wishes she hadn't used it was when that Inflation Reduction Act passed in August. She was on a family vacation. She designated somebody to vote in her place, and that became fodder for hundreds of thousands of dollars in digital and television advertising during the campaign, with Zach Nunn saying that she had lied about why she missed that vote. Actually, Marionette Miller-Meeks also voted by proxy on the Inflation Reduction Act, but and about four other times, but that didn't get nearly as much publicity as Cindy Axne's vote.
We are very,
Ashley Hinson and Randy Feenstra never used proxy voting.
We are very nearly out of time. It has been a pleasure being with you for 2 years now. This is our 100th show. Hard to believe we're near the end of our second year.
I'm looking forward to 2023, Dennis. It's great to work with you.
And we are going to be here. And Laura, it is really great to be with you. And I even know how to pronounce your name now, Laura Bellet. That was referring to our first night when we were on the air. I won't even go into that. All right, we're out of time, Laura. See you next year.
See you next year.
You've been listening to Capital Week on KHOI Community Radio. A reminder that the views and opinions expressed here did not necessarily reflect the opinions of KHOI or its staff. Laura and I will indeed be back next week in the same time slot on January 2nd, 2023, our first program of the new year, when we'll talk about everything interesting, important, or entertaining about politics, Iowa style, and take a look at what we can expect in the way of legislative activity this coming year. We hope you can join us. Until then, thank you so much for the privilege of your time. Happy New Year, everybody, and have a safe, happy, and healthy week.